The Monologue.
Another day, another shooting at a homeless encampment. Now, in the end, thankfully, there were no serious injuries. In the end, no one died. Someone got mildly hurt, lucky enough to get away with a graze, but no one was killed. And yet, these stories are happening all the time. We do have instances of people actually dying, actually getting seriously injured, and no one seems to care. Something happened yesterday afternoon. It was actually during the show, around 4 o'clock, a little after 4. It was some kind of dispute amongst two people at a homeless encampment. I don't think we're allowed to call them homeless anymore. I think the new language is the unhoused, individuals experiencing homelessness. Because in this city, in this country, with Democrats in charge, we care more about word policing than we do about addressing the actual problem the words are trying to describe. But this argument turned into gun violence. Someone settled it with a gun. 53-year-old victim had a graze wound from a bullet that was fired at him. He was taken to Harborview Medical Center. He's fine. He's listed as in stable condition. According to police, the two argued inside of a tent at the encampment, and then the suspect shot the victim. It's not clear at this point whether or not that shooter is in custody. When it comes to homelessness, I can't help but look at the situation over and over and over again and compare it to the claims made by folks on the left. Because while every major city is going to have a homeless issue to contend with, the Democrat-run cities are the ones that seem to actively make it worse. Whether it's Seattle or Portland, LA, Austin, New York, Chicago, the Democrat-run cities make it worse with their policies. And we're told by the left that, for example, they care about gun violence. They're trying to ban more guns again here in Washington State because Democrats care about going after gun violence, and yet they do nothing to get the guns or any other weapon off the streets that are in encampments. We're told over and over and over again by the left that they care about human beings. These homeless people, they're humans just like you. They were your neighbors. You owe them compassion, and it lacks compassion to sweep them. I mean, yes, you're offering sweeps when you have beds for them to go to, but they don't necessarily want those beds. They can't bring all of their earthly belongings with them. Yes, when I say belongings, we're in large part talking about literal garbage, broken items, but they're their broken items. We're told that it lacks compassion to sweep encampments. Okay. But the result means that they're still sleeping outside where it's cold and wet or really, really hot. And they are vulnerable to the nasty elements, the dangerous elements that live either at the encampment with them or nearby who know that they're sitting targets. I'm working on a story, we'll have it soon, of a homeless man who was arrested for raping a woman at an encampment that could have been cleared up a long time ago, but we're too compassionate to clean up these encampments. We're told over and over and over again that progressives care deeply about the environment. Go to a homeless encampment and you tell me with a straight face you care about the environment. As you're looking at all of the trash all over the place, trash that hasn't been picked up, trash that will never be picked up by the people who are responsible. Look at all the used needles on the ground. Look at the human waste. I had the opportunity, the pleasant opportunity, to walk by a homeless person who was using a sidewalk as a toilet. Not for number one. Full view as I'm walking by. And at first, you don't know exactly what's going on. It just looks kind of weird. What's happening? And then you realize what's going on. And then you say, oh, and then you say the word that's actually being done in the moment that you are walking by. And you realize that this city is turning into what it has become because people who claim to care about issues do literally nothing to fix them. They like talking about how much they care. but not care enough to actually do anything about it. And so I guess this is just yet another shooting at another encampment in Seattle.
The interview.
Well, we were told that the supply chain crisis was done. It's over. President Joe Biden can chalk this one up to a fight that he was able to win. Except, of course, he didn't win. It's been an absolute disaster. Nothing really has changed at all. Joining me on the line is Congressman Ralph Norman. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be with you, Justin.
Take us through what the reality is on the ground right now across the country on supply chain crisis.
The reality is, if you go in a grocery store, you see the empty shelves. The reality is, if you are trying to build a house and can't get a water heater or can't get type insulation, you have housing sitting. The reality is that if you're a subcontractor and are trying to get the tools for your trade, you can't do it. That's what this supply chain crisis has boiled down to. The American people know it.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got 104 ships at the dock of the port of Los Angeles. If we can send a man to the moon, Jason, and get him back, we ought to be able to unload the cargo from the ships. And this president's tone deaf. I mean, it took Buttigieg 3 months to even visit the port of Los Angeles, much less all the other officials, whether it's the border or whether it's Afghanistan, you name it. It's been a train wreck from day one, and they don't get it, nor do they care. And it's one crisis after another.
I just what I can't understand, it was a point you made early on, that the American people know what's happening. And they know because, you know, this isn't something like if you're talking about NAFTA, if you're talking about dealings on foreign policy, where the average person doesn't really experience the pain, right? The average person maybe kind of has a grasp on the concept. But when you're going to a grocery store, when you're going to a store and you're seeing the empty shelves, they can literally see the truth. And it was funny because it was last week, Congressman Ted Lieu, the Twitter troll who moonlights as one of your Democratic colleagues in the House, you know, he tweeted a speech out that he gave alongside Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, and he said, and this was the tweet, remember, under the former administration when we ran out of toilet paper, that didn't happen under the Biden administration. He's doing that as literally on Twitter, a trend is Biden's bare shelves.
Well, you know, if in doubt, blame Trump.
Yeah.
If in doubt, you know, deflect the man-made crisis that's happening in every facet of our lives. And you're right, the American people know it, they feel it. And the biggest question I get as I get out in the district is why? Why are we having to pay 60% more, higher gas prices? Why are we running out of basic stock items that we've been able to get for years and years? Why is this president doing this? Why did he leave Americans on the ground in Afghanistan? And, you know, it's been a long 11 months. But to fathom the catastrophes that this administration has willfully inflicted on the people,
yep,
is unfair. And it's a crisis that, you know, I guess we're going to have to put up with until the midterms, but it's of epic proportions from the people I talk to.
Well, it's part of the reason why we're seeing such a significant shift in voters' interest in the Republican Party. I mean, Gallup put out a poll on, I think it was yesterday or Monday, and, you know, today is Tuesday, so yesterday was Monday. They put out this poll that basically said that, you know, starting last year, the majority of voters identified as Democrats. They had, I believe it was a 9-point lead over Republicans. And we end the year with such a significant swing that more voters now, and it's driven mostly by independents, are favoring the Republican Party by 5 points. That traditionally, that poll doesn't show that kind of result. And all of a sudden, bam, you're seeing a significant uptick in interest.
Well, you are, and I think most people realize, Jason, this really isn't Democrat, Republican. This is un-American, what's happening to this country. And I think the Republicans are going to have name out what they're going to do, how they're going to cure it, and then make a promise and deliver on it. That was the magic of Donald Trump. He delivered on the promises. And that's what we're going to have to do as a party.
Yeah.
But I just hate the next, 11 months. We got to go through this, or 9 months, 10 months. We're going to have to deal with an administration that is totally inept, that does not seem to care. When you don't even visit, like the ports that Buttigieg did not visit till 3 months, when you don't even visit, when you're a vice president who is supposed to be in charge of the border, well, you don't even have the decency to go down there and laugh your way through. It spells out what we're facing. But the good news is, I think people are seeing it. Look what happened in Virginia. Look what happened in New Jersey. I think people know it. We just can't keep this pace of one thing after another that has been going on for the last 11 months.
Yeah, and if they didn't gaslight for the last 2 years or so, they might have a better shot at changing the voter laws and federalizing these statewide elections, which would be very bad news for this country. But, thankfully, because they've lied so long, when now they come out with a whopper of a lie saying democracy is going to be in shambles if you don't support this, people aren't buying into it. And that's obviously good news for this country, good news for the Republican Party. But unfortunately, yeah, we're still going to have to deal with some pain over the course of the next several months. We've been talking with Congressman Ralph Norman from South Carolina. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Now this.
The interview.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention to a vote that at some point is going to take place. The reason why we don't know whether or not Dr. Robert Califf is going to even get that final approval for the FDA commissioner spot is because there is a lot of controversy around him, not just coming from Republicans, but you have two Democrats that sided with Republicans in rejecting him during a preliminary Senate committee vote. Joining me on the line to discuss is Mallory Quigley. She's the VP of Communications over at the Susan B. Anthony List. Welcome to the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me to talk about this.
So
it's really important, and people don't always pay attention to the FDA commissioner.
No, they don't. And boy, does the FDA cover a whole bunch of stuff that some people might not even think about, because I would argue that if you talk about abortion access and abortion medications and anything having to do with abortion, probably FDA commissioner wouldn't come to mind, but that's why you're so concerned.
That's right. The abortion lobby is really seeking to expand access to chemical abortion, and they made great headway during the pandemic when, of course, there was a huge transition to telemedicine. And the abortion lobby, big groups like Planned Parenthood, they love chemical abortion because it allows them to continue charging women for abortion, but at significantly reduced overhead costs. They don't have to pay for a surgeon to come in. They don't have to pay for lights on in their abortion facilities. They can simply send women home with these very dangerous drugs. And right now, there are certain regulations surrounding chemical abortion. When he was the FDA commissioner under President Obama, Robert Califf, who's the guy, the nominee in consideration right now, he expanded the time during which chemical abortion could be used, making it even later in pregnancy than it already is. And, this is a huge goal for the abortion lobby, is to get rid of all of the regulations surrounding chemical abortion. And given this extreme pro-abortion administration, if Robert Califf becomes the next FDA commissioner, takes up this post again in the Biden administration, there's no doubt that he would expand chemical abortion. And what that means is that every single post office and mailbox turns into an abortion facility, and there's absolutely no oversight over these very dangerous drugs being used by women and girls.
And for folks at home, the whole concept of chemical abortion is a new concept to most people. It's not the same as Plan B medication. This is medication that would, in fact, due to the combination of different medications, induce an abortion, create an abortion. And that's where the concern from activists such as yourself lie, that this is someone who is pretty extreme on this particular issue. Playing devil's advocate for a moment, because as someone who, I'm pro-life, I don't believe in abortion, I think it's wrong. However, I also understand it to be legal. What is the argument against increasing access for medical care, as some people define it, when we're talking about something that is, in fact, legal?
That's right. Abortion is legal for now. The Supreme Court has a major case before it that they're going to decide likely this summer that's going to, pro-life outcome is going to mean that states actually have the right to pass laws that reflect the values of the people that live there. So we're facing a major change as a nation on that front. But what's really concerning about chemical abortion is not only is it fatal to the life of the unborn child, it's also significantly more dangerous for the woman. And this has been our concern with chemical abortion from the beginning, is that women are being sent home with these drugs to conduct DIY abortions themselves without the care of a doctor. And there's a new report out from our research arm, the Lozier Institute, that shows the exponential risks for women, the increase in emergency room visits after a chemical abortion. Yeah. There was a demonstration a few weeks ago outside the Supreme Court while the court was hearing oral arguments in that Dobbs case that I was mentioning that's going to have such wide-ranging and such major implications. Yes. But women allegedly pregnant, four women took abortion pills, and it's been a month now, and according to the research, at least one of those women should be in the hospital for a serious complication. We're talking about emergency hysterectomies, hemorrhaging, loss of future fertility, sepsis. There's just all sorts of things that can go wrong, so it's really not safe for women. It's much more dangerous than even a chemical and then a surgical abortion. So that is the concern there, that this isn't just, you can be pro-choice and still have deep-seated concerns that the FDA has noted for years now. Mm-hmm. There has been, it's called the REMS, R-E-M-S, Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategies, that surround the distribution of these dangerous drugs. They're in it's a black box. That's the parlance, that they have a black box warning on it, label on them that they're very dangerous. And so, it started with distributing the drugs, via Skype call, and the doctor on one end, miles away, presses a button and he observes the woman consume the first of the two drug regimen. And now they want to eliminate that step altogether, not even to do an ultrasound to ascertain how far along a woman is in pregnancy. So it's just bad news.
It's also just odd because to get a COVID test, they have to watch you swab your nose for fear that you might lie about it. But when it comes to an abortion, taking the life of another human being, it's like, oh no, anything goes. And that's obviously the fear coming from you and so many other activists within the pro-life movement. We've been talking with Mallory Quigley. She's the VP of Communications over at Susan B. Anthony List. You can find them online at sba-list.org. Weirdly enough, you've got some Democrats in your corner for a different reason in this particular debate. But hey, you know what? Beggars can't be choosers sometimes. We'll take some of the support from the Democrats, even if it's for different reasons. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason. Have a good one.
You as well. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story and joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Pete Hegseth is hosting a new 5-part series on Fox Nation. It's available right now. It tackles the progressive takeover of the schools that your kids go to, the miseducation of America. Joining me on the line ahead of a live summit on Thursday is my friend Pete Hegseth from Fox and Friends Weekends. Thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, what's up, man? How's the busiest man in showbiz?
I'm keeping busy, but now I've got to add to my list, my queue of stuff to watch, your new series on Fox Nation. Take us through sort of like, how do you even start a conversation about the progressive takeover of schools?
Yeah, you start by going back to where it started. I mean, it's one of those things where what's the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem, and then really getting to the bottom of that admission. And, you know, in Seattle out west, there's been plenty of reporting on sort of the lunacy, even in, you know, K through 12 education.
Mm-hmm.
But most of America thinks that's just confined to Seattle or LA or New York or Chicago. That's a big city. That's a liberal. That's a blue state problem. It's not in my backyard. And that's the kind of, blinders we're trying to rip off with this series. No. It is your school. It is the school I went to. It's the school your kids and grandkids go to unless you've intentionally placed them in a certain form of education. It's all part of the progressive project, from the bell ringing to seven periods in the day to teacher tenure to the curriculum to the Pledge of Allegiance, which is one of the more powerful revelations in this series. Is originally the pledge did not include under God, and it mm-hmm. was not about a patriotic notion. It was about pulling kids away from allegiance to God, and it was written by a socialist. It's examples like that time and time again, or social studies, which are an invention of the progressives, as they wanted to pull us away from classical forms of education, of true liberal arts. So we peel the onion all the way back to, you know, how kids were founded in America, and then what progressives intentionally, this is not, you know, just philosophy and educational stuff. This is the projects they undertook, the things they wrote down, the ways in which they changed our schools, the power centers that they control, that'll give you a sense of how bad the situation is and hopefully motivate a lot of people to make different educational choices for their kids.
Yeah, and it's so important, your first point to underscore, like, this isn't just happening in the big cities. And I get text messages, or I used to get them a lot from folks who were listeners, who said, I am so glad I escaped Seattle. I now live in Mukilteo. I now live in Tacoma or Bellevue, and things are so much better now. But now they're saying, oh my gosh, it's now here. All of that stuff spreads.
Yes.
And with schools, oh my gosh, how nefarious some of this is being, how some of this is being done, where you've got schools saying, oh, no, we're just teaching about anti-racism. And you're like, a person who's not paying that close attention to the stories and the topics the way you and I would say, well, that makes sense. Of course I'm anti-racism. But that's not actually what
Correct.
They mean. They're talking in code words.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's code words like equity. It's code words like anti-racism. It's code words across the board. And they want those code words to confuse people intentionally or bore them to death to the point where mm-hmm. they sound like, oh, okay, whatever over there, we'll move on to something else. But you're right. It's actually, in fact, it's actually the elite schools, the rich schools, the private schools, the good public schools with the shiny gyms and the iPads. Those are often the most woke ones with the most demand of conformity on the bleeding edge of these educational philosophies. But again, why does it hit inner cities, suburbs, rural schools? Because the entire educational pipeline is captured. The teachers, colleges, the curriculum. How do they deny that it's in the curriculum? Because they don't have to put it in the curriculum.
Exactly.
They put it in the pedagogy, which is the method of teaching. So it's just like the Montessori schools, right? If your kids go to Montessori school, they don't read the works of Maria Montessori. They get the philosophy of how you educate in a Montessori system. The same thing with critical race theory or gender theory or social emotional learning or all the buzzwords that they use. They don't have to put it in the curriculum if they're teaching it and then the tests start to cater toward it and the textbooks are shaped. I mean, most textbooks in high schools today use huge portions of Howard Zinn's A People's History of America,
yep.
which is America's history written from the Soviet perspective. This is lock, stock, and barrel, a culturally Marxist takeover of our classroom, and it started with Marxists, and now they're out in the open about their intentions of tearing the country down. Something like a 1619 project is a perfect mm-hmm. example of that. Now you overturn the whole apple cart, and it's not just Seattle. It's everything in between. And we have to be clear-eyed about that, because you and I both, encouraged by what parents are doing at school board meetings.
Yep.
It's important. In Loudoun County, what Glenn Youngkin, in fact, we're doing this summit on Thursday in Virginia for a reason. There's an ever, you know, educational revolt there, a wake up for people, and that's great. But my mom protested at the school boards in the 80s and 90s too about a local curriculum. And guess what changed? Nothing.
Exactly.
Guess what's going to change in Loudoun County? Pretty much nothing. Because the unions are entrenched, the curriculum and the SAT is being removed, the curriculum is already entrenched, the pedagogy is entrenched, the teachers can't be fired. They are the ones that ultimately elect the school board. The principals are all, you know, woke, and so is the superintendent. You're not changing it. So realizing that it isn't, you know, the good old days where you could form the PTA and go up to the school board and make a change and take it. No, it's not happening. And we need a radical reorientation. We need to leave the public schools, in my opinion, and champion educational choice, intentional classical education, like Christian classical education. There's hundreds of schools like that across America, and or homeschooling. I mean, there are options out there for patriotic parents, but I think we need to get over the notion that we're just going to deprogram what the kids mm-hmm. learned at Democrat today camp every day. That's over. You're gonna. Why do you want to do that as a parent? Send your kids to a school that reinforces your values, doesn't undermine them.
Yeah, it's always a fight with the school, and you don't want to have to do that as a parent. By the way, we're joined by Pete Hegseth. His new series, it's a 5-part series. It's available right now at Fox Nation. It's called The Miseducation of America. There's a live summit on Thursday morning that will also be available at Fox Nation, foxnation.com. It's an amazing streaming service, and it's one that's independent of any like cable providers that might not want some of the content on air. What's curious to me is, or what I actually, the only positive that's come out of COVID-19 as far as the schooling situation is that parents just got woke, just not on the topic that folks on the left wanted them
awake.
To, right? They now know what's being taught. And there's a story right now that I have at ktth.com. I broke it this morning. There was a video that was shown to students for MLK Day in North Thurston School District. And in this, they amplified a poem that rags on police, rags on this country, just is horrific. The parents would never have seen that if the kid wasn't currently in a remote learning situation. If that kid was not in front of that laptop, and if they didn't have to upload the video to this online area for classes, parents would have never known about any of this stuff.
You're exactly right. I mean, I call it the COVID-16-19 moment, the COVID-16-19 effect. It's the Zoom screens where the parents were mugged by reality, the teachers couldn't hide it anymore. But how long, that you hit the key question, how long has this been happening? And parents had no idea because they were never allowed in. And it's that sort of monopoly on the minds of kids that educators expected. Frankly, it made them more bombastic and willing to be more out about how woke they are. And now parents have been awoken to that, to your point. And I think a lot of parents are just looking around and say, okay, what do I do next? Like my kid's in sixth grade or my kid's in third grade, or I went to public school and I always assumed my kids would too. If it's good enough for me, why is it good enough for them? And then there's also the whole complex we usually use for Congress, which is the idea that, well, I don't like Congress, can't stand Congress, but I really like my congressman. There's a lot of that going on too. Well, I know public education is left wing, but my school is just fine. You know, the principal, he's kind of a nice guy, and the teachers, maybe even a couple of them are Christians and all that. That we lie to ourselves in mm-hmm. thinking that everything's going to be okay. Our kids are not being taught the values we cherish. We have to spend as much time on their education and frankly money as we do on where we vacation, or, you know, what gifts we buy for Christmas. I mean, this should be a priority. You can't by default hope the government will educate your kids. And we hope this series is a wake-up call on that.
Last quick question for you, and it might be too personal, so don't answer if you don't want to, but you are raising a small army of children. How are you handling their education, knowing what you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, and we have a blended family situation, so there's multiple different schools. And, you know, knowing what I know, I want to get every single one of my kids in a classical Christian school as quickly as possible. And some of them already are. And others were in public school, and we pulled them out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Right now they're in Catholic school. We want to get them out of that Catholic school into a classical Christian school. Not that the Catholic school is bad. I'm glad God is at least in the classroom. But it's still got a, you know, progressive strand mm-hmm. in how they do the frame of education. So it's, to me, it's classical Christian schools, and I've got most of them in them, and my goal in the next year is to have all of them in them. And I at least, it doesn't mean my job is done as a parent. The school doesn't do everything. I've still got to be the dad, But at least I know it's reinforcing the things we're teaching at home.
I hope at least the takeaway for a lot of people who are listening right now, and maybe you're in a position where you can't just remove your kid from the current school, but just make sure you're having conversations with them about what's being taught in the classroom, going over some of the material. If it's online, make sure you're looking at it, because kids are not going to be able to point this stuff out to you. And in years past, if they pointed out some of the stuff that was being put in front of them, you might not even have believed them. You might say, okay, you clearly misheard that. They're obviously not saying that all white people are oppressors and they have to dismantle systems of oppression. Stop lying to me. So just make sure that you're getting more involved. And you know what? Look, to figure out what you need to be looking for, make sure you go right now to Fox Nation and check out The Miseducation of America. It's out right now, season one, 5 episodes. It's all available for you to stream on demand. And then, of course, on Thursday, there is that live summit that will also be available at Fox Nation. Pete Hegseth is the host. He's also hosting Fox News Primetime all this week. I'll be on Friday. And I look forward to that.
Yeah.
And appreciate your
time.
You're
the man. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
There is just a disturbing story coming out of Los Angeles or LA County, but it just as easily could have occurred in King County. Not Snohomish County, not yet. Not Pierce County, not yet, but certainly in King County. The district attorney there, their version of Dan Satterberg, is George Gascon. This is a radical who is funded by George Soros to completely dismantle so-called systems of oppression and reimagine public safety. But by reimagining public safety, what they mean is make the public less safe. And now he's facing even more criticisms, not just from the folks who generally criticize him, but others who have sort of hit that bar of, okay, now I got to say something. And they're calling him out because he is basically allowing a 26-year-old woman who pled guilty to sexually assaulting a 10-year-old girl, basically letting her off without any severe punishment. Why? Because she's transgender. And because when the crime was committed, she was 2 weeks shy of turning 18. Now, she technically faces, after pleading guilty, she technically faces a very short stay at some juvenile detention center, even though she's 26 years old now. But almost certainly, she'll get probation on home confinement instead. Now, the transgender woman's name is Hannah Tubbs. And 2 weeks before she turned 18, she walked into a bathroom over at a Denny's in LA. She grabbed a 10-year-old girl who just happened to be there at the time. She grabbed her by the throat, pulled the young girl into a stall, locked the stall, and then sexually assaulted her. Now, up until 2019, the crime was considered just unsolved. It was, I believe, listed as a cold case. Except at that moment, Tubbs was arrested on suspicion of battery in Idaho. You see, this is someone who has a history of being a degenerate monster. And at the time, detective put her DNA into a database, and they ended up connecting it to the sexual assault. But unfortunately, everything started to move in the court system when Gascon was in office. And he had promised, look, I'm not going to prosecute children as adults anymore because brains aren't fully formed at that point. And so Tubbs, in effect, is getting off with home confinement out of fear that as a trans woman being put in an adult facility would put her at risk, almost at the same risk, I guess, as putting her in a bathroom at a Denny's with a 10-year-old girl. So just a few points. If you can change your gender as a teen, you can face adult punishment for a crime that you committed as a teen. You're an adult now. You got away with it for the longest time. You deserve in prison. You deserve to be in prison. Not for a short stay, but for a very long stay. due to the trauma that you committed to that young girl. 2 weeks shy of 18 is the differentiator here? Really? 2 weeks? We're talking 2 weeks. That if only that 10-year-old girl was victimized by an 18-year-old instead of a 17-year-old 2 weeks shy of becoming 18, that somehow this would be more serious? Tell that to the 10-year-old girl whose innocence was violently stolen from her. It's absurd. Your brain is functioning and fully formed at 18? That you'll punish but not 2 weeks shy of 18? Okay. And finally, does anyone truly believe that if Hannah Tubbs was seen purely as a biological male, that this would be a different story or the same? If it wasn't Hannah Tubbs, if it was a man, biological man, not presenting as a woman, just a cisgendered man who did this, do you think that the punishment would be the same? Do you think George Gascon would go out of his way to treat this transgender woman as more of a victim than the 10-year-old girl whose innocence she stole? This is someone who has a history of criminal acts. It actually has a connection to Washington State, because not only has she been arrested for crimes in Idaho, but also Washington. We're talking battery, drug possession, probation violations. This is a bad person. And when you have a policy that is a blanket one, that you consider no circumstances, no context beyond just a basic, well, I'm not going to do this to that, then you allow people like Hannah Tubbs, who doesn't deserve to be free, to constantly get second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth chances, endless chances. And what they generally do with those endless chances, they continue to commit crimes. I just hope, I pray that the next victim of Hannah Tubbs isn't another minor.
The Last Rants.
And with that, this is a topic that is generally considered sensitive, because she happens to be transgender. And I actually talked about this on Fox News yesterday. And, you know, Harris Faulkner made the point of this is not a trans story. And she's right. She's right. This isn't a story about transgender anything. The only exception I would say, and I pointed this out yesterday, I do think that because she is transgender, that she's getting a lighter sentence. No sentence really at all. Because in the world of grievance politics, identity politics, in the world in which we have these intersectional identities that make one a victim more so than another, what ends up happening is you see someone like this and you're saying, well, this is someone who, you know, comes from a community that has been systemically the victim of bigotry, blah, blah, blah. And so you go light and you pretend that she's the actual victim when no, she's not. She's the bad guy. She's the bad guy here. She's the villain, not the hero. And a lot of people don't like to talk about stories like this out of fear that someone will call them out and try to cancel them. And I always share those fears in the back of my head. But I'm not going to stop talking about these stories because rabid activists in the community want to silence anyone who does. Talking about this story is not a condemnation about transgender people. No matter what folks on the left will have you say, you're only going after them because she's transgender. No, I'm going after her because she's a degenerate criminal who sexually assaulted a 10-year-old girl. That's why. And if that's not objectionable to you, you have lost your way, not me. And that's the Last Rants.